So you have this lady that's been fooling around in Discovery for about 20 months. She or one of her cohorts have obviously done a lot of destruction of evidence. We get down to whether she should be held in contempt and some other things, and she says, well, you know, you just don't have personal jurisdiction over me, Judge Jergen. I love you dearly, but I really don't want you to sanction me. And the judge ended up saying, well, you know, I think there should have been a subpoena. That's what the rule seems to say for non-parties, but we have this thing called consent, and you really consented to the jurisdiction of the bankruptcy court by going through this prolonged discovery. We had multiple hearings, you produced certain things, we had hearings along the way, and so I'm going to hold that I have personal jurisdiction over you. I do have the ability to sanction you. I do have the ability to look at this spoliation issue. And this is probably, I think the ruling is correct on the consent part. The reason we have it in the materials, we're trying to cover all the materials, is to just point out the rule seems to me to require a subpoena, which is often, I'd say more often than not done in my court on 2004 exam. So you need to be careful on that. Any reaction to that, Roy?
Only that I think there's sort of this fundamental belief, I think, that we have that if we issue an order and someone becomes aware of the order, mm-hmm. they have to comply with the order, and the rule won't take away the force of the order. But yeah,
I was just going to say, from a judge's perspective, too, there's, I think a judge, a good judge like Judge Jernigan, is going to find a way to have personal jurisdiction over people that have labored in the vineyard for 20 months going back and forth on this.
Does that mean that you wouldn't find that way?
I said a good judge would, so.
All right. We're going to move ahead to page 29 and talk about lien validity. For those of you that have been following all of the abandonment of acceleration notices, you know that the Fifth Circuit has pretty well consistently, every time they get one of these cases, made the legal pronouncement that today is not the day in which we're giving away a free home. And so this is one of those that continues along the path of, so far no one has found the day on which the Fifth Circuit's giving away a free home because of an acceleration issue. It's HSBC Bank versus Crum. This is one is interesting because there were a whole bunch of different tollings. There was tolling because of a lawsuit that had been filed. There were a couple of bankruptcies mixed in. And the question in the case is under Section 108 of the Bankruptcy Code, how long did the tolling last? And it turns out that it mattered in terms of whether the acceleration was effective or whether the lender could still foreclose as to whether you counted both the first and the last day or only the first day and not the last day, because that made the difference between 107 days of tolling and 108 days of tolling. And so the legal principle is count first and last. That's what the rule says. Follow the damn rule. Next case on page 29 is Christiana Trust versus Riddle. This is a pretty interesting case as far as I'm concerned. This is a RESPA violation lawsuit to which there were multiple defendants. Christiana Trust was a bank, and Ocwen was the primary servicer, and so was BSI. So the question was whether the bank, this is the only question decided on the appeal, isn't whether there was a RESPA violation, but if there was a RESPA violation, could the bank be held liable for it? And the bank was held not to be able to be held liable for it for two reasons. First, the pleadings did not establish sufficient facts that established an agency relationship between the bank and Ocwen. The mere fact that they were a servicer was not enough to establish agency. And the regulation only imposes duties on servicers and not on banks. So the bank walks from the RESPA violation.
This one comes up a lot. Banks get sued under RESPA a lot for what their servicer does. This one is flat-footed against that, don't you think?
I agree. I thought it was an interesting and correct decision. And even if it wasn't, it's the Fifth Circuit, and we're going to follow it. On page 31, we have Whitcomb versus Paul and Partners Locklane. This is one of my opinions that is in there, and it's a matter that's still going on, so I'm going to try and be pretty careful about it.
You can't spend a half an hour on your own opinion, too, Marvin.
All right. We have a situation where there is a loan that is alleged to be in violation of the Texas Constitution. because it was a loan on a, the allegation is it was a loan on a homestead, and that the home was placed into a an entity so that it wasn't an individual homestead anymore. And the issue is whether it was a transfer done to defeat the purposes of the Constitution. So there's still a lot going on in the case, but part of this, the part of the decision that we're actually reporting now is that the pro, and I'm watching Reese Baker because he's the lawyer on this, so I'm going to try and be careful, Reese, and not help you or hurt you here. The part that we decided was is that some of the proceeds were used to pay off an existing loan, and then some of the proceeds went to the borrower or the individual, depending upon who wins the fight as to whether there is a difference between the entity borrower and the individual, a decision we haven't made yet. And what I held was is that the portion of the proceeds that went to pay the existing and admittedly valid first lien gave the funder, the lender, a subrogation to their rights. So that if you split the proceeds into how much was used to pay off the existing first lien and how much went to the borrower, the part that went to the existing first lien was going to maintain a valid first lien. And then, as I recall, we're still having a trial on the rest. Reese, do I have that about right?